a second here. In the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews is trying to encourage the Christians to remain faithful. And he actually goes to a lot of lengths in that book. I don't know if you've ever taken time to study through the book of Hebrews. It's very in depth, and it goes into a lot of Old Testament history, and it talks about a lot of different things, but he goes into several different approaches as to how he's going to encourage them to remain faithful. Some have fallen away because they're just immature in their faith. Some have fallen away because some have come into the church and have ravaged it with false teaching. Some have fallen away because they've gone back into their old lifestyle and they have seen the things around them and they've gone back to worrying about possessions and worried about all of the different things of this life. And so he goes into several different arguments as to why they should remain faithful. And we're not going to go into all those today. But he gets to the end of the book in chapter 11. And he says, I want to talk to you about some people, some heroes of faith. And so kind of his last argument that he uses is, look at all these people and all the things that they have done. And they are our witnesses. He calls them in chapter 12, a cloud of witnesses that surround us. And they encourage us to remain faithful and to keep going. That all the things that they accomplished throughout their lifetimes, many of them never saw the promises of God, but yet they remained faithful. And here we are seeing the fruition of God's promises, having seen Jesus and having been able to accept the salvation that God has given through Jesus. And we can move forward not only because of that, but because of these heroes of faith. All right, I want you to do something with me just for a moment. I want everyone to, if you would, close your eyes. And all of us have gone to probably some type of a hall of fame or some type of a place where people are memorialized and talked about. And I want you to imagine that this hall of faith is one of those places, a very physical place. And I want you to picture that as you come in the front door and you're led through this room of faith. And as we come through the room, the very first person that's talked about, of course, faith is defined. And it's defined on the wall in large letters, and it says, faith is the reality of what is hoped for, the proof of what is not seen. For by it, those who have gone before us were approved. And then it goes on down and you see the first person, and that is Abel. And it talks about what he did and the sacrifice that he offered. And then Enoch, how he was taken away because of his righteousness. And then a place is devoted to Noah. And then Abraham and Isaac and Sarah. As we walk around the room, we understand why these people are memorialized, why they're talked about as heroes of faith. We know their stories. And then it talks about the faith of Abraham and how he offered Isaac. And then it talks about Moses, and a large section of the room is dedicated to Moses. And then to Gideon, and Barak, and Samson, and Jephthah, and David, and Samuel. And then there's a section dedicated to those who have lost their lives for the faith. And then you come to a spot, and it says, Rahab the prostitute. And maybe you're thinking, as I'm thinking, how does she fit into this picture? All of these heroes of faith, how does she fit in to the picture? Okay, you can open your eyes. Sorry, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic. Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Jacob, Isaac, Moses, Gideon, Samson. We know all their stories. We understand why they are immortalized. We've learned their stories since we were children. We understand about them. And then it just seems like out of the blue, Rahab the prostitute. What an unlikely hero. What an unlikely person to be talked about among these great men and women of faith. Now, don't get me wrong, we can go through the lives of every one of these people that are talked about, and we can see things that they did wrong. We can see the negatives in their lives, can't we? I mean, they're very obvious. Because no one's perfect. But yet, it seems like, I mean, a prostitute, really? We're going to immortalize her for all time? There's only so many slots that are available in the Hall of Faith, and yet we're going to dedicate one to a prostitute? Well, maybe she must have done something really, really, really great. So let's see what her faith, how her faith is recognized in Hebrews 11:31. It says simply this: she received the spies in peace and didn't perish with those who disobeyed. Surely it was more than that. Come on, really? She received the spies in peace. So what's the story here? Her faith is put up there on par with all of these great men and women of faith that we see the reason. So what did she do that was so tremendous? What was her faith all about? Why is she recognized in this way? Turn with me to Joshua chapter 2. We're going to spend just a brief couple minutes here. Joshua chapter 2. And I know we know this story and what happened here, but I want you to focus in not so much on the story that's taking place, but I want you to focus in on Rahab herself. As we're going through this story, I want you to think about why it is that years and years and years later, a writer put her on par with all of these other people of faith. So Joshua the son of Nun secretly sent two men as spies from Acacia Grove, saying, "Go and scout the land, especially Jericho." So they left, and they came to the house of a woman, a prostitute named Rahab, and they stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelite men have come here tonight to investigate the land." Then the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab and said, "Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, for they came to investigate the entire land." But the woman had taken away the two men and hidden them. So she said, "Yes, the men did not come to me. They did come to me, but I didn't know where they were from." And at nightfall, when the gate was about to close, the men went out, and I don't know where they were going. "Chase after them quickly, and you can catch up with them. But she had taken them up on the roof and hidden them among the stalks of flax that she had arranged on the roof. The men pursued them along the road to the fords of the Jordan, and as soon as they left to pursue them, the gate was shut." This faith that we find out that she had in her life was not just something that she had it was something that she put into practice. What did this mean for her to take these men into her home and to hide them? You can respond at any time during the sermon. What's that? Immediate death. Not only her immediate death, but maybe the immediate death of all of her family. And we find out later in the story, she has a number of family, right? Do you think they would have thought twice about killing a prostitute? No. Maybe she could have thought, you know, I'm not really that important. I have a faith in this God, but I'm not really that important. But yet she put this faith into practice. She lived it out. We're going to talk about the details of her faith in just a second. You know, it's an amazing thing that of all of the people probably that are in the book, the chapter 11 of Hebrews, she's probably the one we know the least about. It just says Rahab a prostitute. We don't know how old she was. We don't know how she became a prostitute. We don't know if she was living the life as a prostitute at that particular time or maybe it was early in her life. We don't know how she came to faith in the Lord specifically. All we know is that when the men came into to Jericho, that she took them in. She took them into her own home at her own risk. And she hid them. And then, of course, she sent them away and she sent them off to the wall and let them go a little bit later. Let's talk about some things about her faith. Some details about her faith. Verse 8. Before the men fell asleep, she went up on the roof and she said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land. And that the dread of you has fallen on us. And everyone who lives in this land is panicking because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt. And what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings, you completely destroyed across the Jordan. When we heard this, we lost heart. And everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above. And on earth below. Now please swear to me that by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have showed kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father, mother, brothers, sisters, and all who belong to them and save us from death. The first thing she did was she recognized God's presence. She said, I know the Lord. What's peculiar about that? She was a pagan. She was pagan land. Say the same thing? An idol worshiper. At least she lives among idol worshipers, right? How did she come to a knowledge of God? You heard what had happened. And most of these events had taken place years and years before this. It's not as if she probably had talked to anybody who had ever actually seen it. What's the definition of faith? Believing in something that you have never seen, that you can't touch, that you can't feel. She said it with confidence, right? The Lord has... He brought you across the Red Sea and he destroyed the kings of Sihon and Og and he did this and he did that. She talks about all these different things that they had done, that God had done through the Israelites, and yet she had never seen them. She had never participated in them. Matter of fact, she was not even a part of the Israelite that had actually gone through this. One thing I realize in this chapter when you look at it is that she seems to have a lot more faith than the Israelite people themselves. How many times did they forget what had happened? Every like 10 steps they take, God says, hey, let's set up a memorial so you remember what I did. Hey, let's set up a memorial so you remember what I did. They were really forgetful people, right? They denied the Lord's power again and again and again. And here's a pagan lady, a prostitute in a foreign land who says, I know the Lord. I know He's real. I know that He exists. Secondly, she realized God's providence. She said, I know the Lord has given you this land. She definitely had more faith than most of the Israelites. Where had they been right before this? The 40 years leading up to this, where had they been? Wandering in the wilderness. Why? They refused to take the land. God said, I've given you this land, and I've done all of these things for you. And they said, oh, we can't do it. The people are too big, and there's too much, and no, we just can't take it. And so God turned them around, and He marched them through the wilderness for 40 years. And she says, as a pagan woman, I know the Lord has given you this land. She knows that God has provided the land for the people already. Pretty tremendous faith. Thirdly, she acknowledged God's power. She said, the dread of you has fallen on us. And everyone who lives in this land is panicking because of you. I want you to think about the irony of this, okay? They had come to the edge of the Jordan, and the spies had gone in, and they come out, and what did they say? They're too scary, right? They're giants. Oh, we just can't go in because they're too big and we're too small. We look like grasshoppers. What was the reality of the situation? They were afraid of the Israelites. They were sitting in there going, oh, we're all dead. I don't care if we're giants or not, we're all dead. We're the grasshoppers. And yet, the children of Israel didn't have enough faith to know of God's power. She said, we're all scared to death of you. But we have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the Amorite kings. And when we heard this, we lost heart. Why did we lose heart? Because she believed that those things happened. The Israelites, the generation of Israelites, weren't there at the Red Sea. Just like she wasn't there at the Red Sea. But she knew that it happened. People today, it kills me, watching like the History Channel and trying to explain how the waters of the Red Sea might have parted by natural circumstances, right? This big wind just came up and when it just parted the water. Why don't people want to believe that the Red Sea was parted and it was dry land? Simple reason, it's impossible. It's impossible. Except by God's power. Why don't people want to believe the miracles of the New Testament? Because, oh, well, it's impossible. Except by God's power. She said, I didn't have to see it, but I believe that it happened. The impossible happened. I believe it. And we've lost heart. We know you're going to win. We're all scared to death. Fourth, she proclaimed God's preeminence. And this might be the most amazing statement of all of this. She says, I know that the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. She had a pretty deep understanding of who God is. What was their understanding of gods? Yeah, just for her to say there's one God above on heaven and on earth, I mean, that's an amazing statement. But that God is something that can't be seen, someone that can't be seen. What were their gods like? They had an altar for everything, right? They had a tower or a building or a statue that they worshipped and that they offered sacrifices to. She understood who God was, that He was above everyone and everything. And nothing was outside of His realm of power. Is heaven above? and earth below. That pretty much covers it all, right? She sought God's protection. She said, I want you to save me. What does that acknowledge when she says, I want you to save me? That he can. That he can. I want you to save me. This is a pagan prostitute asking for the salvation of God. And he was going to do that in quite a miraculous way, right? Just leaving one part of the wall and that's the only thing that was standing. I mean, that's not even really possible, is it, Rich? I mean, that's one of those... You ever watch a movie with Rich? Okay, he always tells you the stuff that's impossible to happen, right? That couldn't happen. So, Rich, shut up. Stop. You're ruining the movie, right? Always, the engineer got to say the stuff that would not happen like that, you know? Judy knows. She just doesn't watch movies with him. It's impossible to happen. But she acknowledges, she asks for God's salvation, realizing that He can and will provide it. In reality, what did she do? What did she do in reality? She opened up her door. She let the spies in. She said, hey, there's some stuff on the roof. Go hide in it. Then she let them down the wall. She didn't really seemingly do that much, really. Yet her faith was so amazing. Her faith was amazing. The last thing is that she believed God's promise. It says in verse 21, they say, they tell her that what that she should do. She should put a red cord down on her window, and that when they come to destroy the city, that they're going to leave her alive. If anybody that's in your household, anybody that's in your house at the time, you will be saved. And so it says, she went immediately, as soon as they left, and she tied the scarlet cord to her window. A scarlet cord in my window is not going to save my life. She didn't question it. She just believed it. She just believed the promises of God. She believed they were going to happen. So, she recognized God's presence. She realized God's providence, acknowledged God's power, proclaimed, it sounds like an Andy lesson, but proclaimed God's preeminence, sought God's protection, and believed in God's promise. You don't know how long it took me to get all those P's. Quite a while. Actually, not really. I did it this morning. Okay. So that's the details of her faith. Let's look at the reward of her faith. Joshua chapter 6. It says, but the city and everything in it are set apart to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and everyone with her in the house will live because she hid the men we sent. And Joshua said to the two men who had scouted the land, go to the prostitute's house and bring the woman out of there and all who are with her just as you promised her. So the young men who had scouted went in and brought out Rahab and her father, mother, brothers, and all who belonged to her. And they brought out her whole family and settled them outside the camp of Israel. However, Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute, her father's household, and all who belonged to her because she hid the men Joshua had sent to spy on Jericho. And a very interesting statement says, and she lives in Israel to this day. At the time of the writing of this book, she was still alive and she was still living among the Israelites. She had made her home with them. She had become one of the Israelites. All of those things that she went through, all of those things, those parts of her faith, ended up in a reward. God kept His promise. She was saved. And she was rewarded because of her faith. Let's look at what this example means to us, because really that's what Hebrews chapter 11 is all about. Hebrews chapter 11 is about an example to us. It goes through all the list of all those guys that did all those amazing things, and the whole point is an example to the people to whom he's writing. So what's her example to us? The first thing is this. Her faith overcame her past. I don't understand, but even in the New Testament, in the Hall of Faith, she's still referred to as Rahab, the prostitute. I guess the lesson is don't ever become a prostitute. That's all you'll be called the rest of your life. I don't know. But throughout history, it doesn't say Rahab, who was formerly a prostitute. It just says Rahab the prostitute. What she did in her past stuck with her, didn't it? It stuck with her. It would have been very easy for her to say, I'm just a prostitute. God's not going to listen to me. God's not going to save me. God's not going to do anything for me. I'm nothing. Do you fall into that trap sometimes? Your homework assignment for today is to go home and to list out all the sins you've committed this week. I did this in my class at school. I said, all right, take out a piece of paper, and I want you to write in all the sins you committed this week and then turn it in at the end of class. And they're always like, what? Just kidding, guys. Just kidding. What if we were to compile a list of the sins we committed within the past week? How many notebooks would we need? Jeff would need like 4 notebooks. Yeah. Yeah. But see, God doesn't judge us based on that. If I'm hampered by my past, if I look at my past and I say, who am I? God's not going to bless me because of that, because of who I was in the past. I'm in serious trouble. I could have a lot of little names after my name. David the liar. David the cheater. David the, just keep on putting things after my name. Don't add any to that. Don't add any to the list. You were thinking it, weren't you? Thinking it, yeah. But her faith overcame her past. Look at this verse. It says, but now apart from the law, God's righteousness has been revealed, attested by the law and the prophets. That is, God's righteousness through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. There is no distinction. It does not matter if you've got the name prostitute after your name. God's grace shows no distinction. And that's a really, really good thing. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. When you get into the business, and this is the battle that Jesus fought with the Pharisees throughout the entire Gospels. When you get into the business of judging other people's sins, what's the first thing Jesus is going to say to you? Say what? Take your plank out of your own eye. Or, go ahead, pick up a stone. Pick up a stone. I don't need to get in the business of judging other people's sins, although I can tell people what the Bible says about what's right and wrong. Because the fact of the matter is, there is no distinction. We've all sinned and fallen short. We're looking at this hall of faith and we get to the prostitute and we're like, whoa, that's out of place in here. No, it's actually in place. Because that's where all of us are. Because, you know, you could add to Noah's name, you could add drunkard, right? To Moses' name, you could add weakling, murderer. He could have several beside his name, right? To Abraham, you could add in faithless, you know, liar. You could add in lots of stuff. There is no distinction, and that's a really, really good thing. Second, her faith acted in the present. What would have happened if she had faith in God, but when God called upon her to do something, she didn't do it? She wouldn't be in the hall of faith. She wouldn't have survived. She would not have been living among the Israelites. When God calls upon us to act on our faith, we have to act on our faith. You see that faith is active together with works. And by works, faith was perfected. So the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him for righteousness. And he was called God's friend. You see that a man is justified by works and not faith alone. And in the same way, wasn't Rahab the prostitute also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by a different route? For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so also faith without works is dead. He pulls Abraham out to show as an example, and he pulls Rahab out as an example of someone who lived their faith, who acted in their faith. Third, her faith saved her in the end. Not only just physically speaking, sure, she lived. It didn't just save her because she ended up living with the Israelites, but it saved her in the long term. This book of Hebrews, it connects the old with the new. It says, all those people who died in faith, they've now received the promise because of Jesus Christ. Rahab is mentioned in the book of Hebrews because I imagine she is in heaven. She was saved by her faith. For you are saved by grace through faith. And this is not of yourselves, but it is God's gift, not from works, so that anyone can boast. For we are His creation, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared ahead of time so that we should walk in them. So where are you in your faith? Sometimes it's so easy to just discount even the faith of someone that seems small. Oh, well, he went out and he did this certain particular thing, and you're like, oh, well, that's nothing, you know. Well, that's not the way God works. He recognizes faith in individual lives and hearts. All of us can think about times where we've had faith, where we've done things outside the box, where we've done things by faith and not by sight. We can also think of times when we didn't, where we depended too much on the here and now, where we depended too much on those things that I could touch. I've got to have a faith, and I realize that it overcomes anything that I've ever done in my past. My faith has to act in the present. Got to live it out. And I got to know that my faith will save me in the end. I just can't wait for this statement. This simple statement. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter the joys of your reward. How about you? That'll be the sweetest statement of all time. And I can't wait to hear it. And that's what we should all strive for, and I know you do as well as I. If something that has been said today in the lesson, as it's kind of spurred a thought in your heart, if it has challenged you in some way, if it has caused you to think, you know, I just need to do a lot better. I just need to do better. And I need prayers of my brothers and sisters, my family here. I need the prayers of those around me to help me in that process. Maybe it's that you don't want to come forward and say, hey, I've done this and I've done that. Maybe it's just you need to just grab Papa or Jimmy or Rich or Jeff and say, hey, would you mind just stepping back in this room back here and praying a special prayer for me today? I really need you to someone to pray with me. Whatever your need is today, I hope that you'll act and that you'll come forward, or that you will ask whatever your particular need is, not only during the singing of the song, but even afterwards. But this is a good time as we stand, as Cody's going to lead us in this song. Let's all stand.